This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we will talk with Trina Scott Edwards, the wife of Edwin Washington Edwards. Their reality show, The Governor's Wife, premieres this weekend, and we'll talk with Trina about that and much more regarding the unconventional relationship with the 86-year-old former governor and his beautiful 35-year-old bride. Also, Mark LaFleur, his novel is Elysian Fields. It's a book about New Orleans, and we will talk with this man who lives in New York and will be at the book festival in a week. And we'll also hear from music video historian Stephen Patalo, an LSU graduate who's been doing some interesting work in his line, and he's interviewed everybody from Joey Romano to Joan Jett. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we begin with Trina Scott Edwards, the wife of former Louisiana governor, the only four-term governor, Edwin Washington Edwards. Their reality show, The Governor's Wife, debuts this Sunday, the long-awaited reality show. Good morning, Trina.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Nice to hear your voice, and I'm sure you're eager for the start of The Governor's Wife.
Very much. I just realized this morning that it's in 2 days, so I got a little little bit of nervousness that washed over me, but I'm excited for it.
Well, what will we see? Are we going to be surprised?
I think so. Of course, those people who know us well probably won't be, but I think that you're going to see a different situation than you imagine. So many people imagine us to be different than we actually are, and I'm excited to have the chance to show people that we're just normal. We love each other. We have a healthy, great relationship. We have good relationships with our families and our children, and I'm excited for people to get to see that.
How did you meet?
We were pen pals when Edwin was in prison. A lot of people ask me the question if, you know, I wrote him with the intention of having a romantic relationship, and that's usually the question that most people want to know. And the answer to that is no, I did not. I wanted to meet him for the same reason that a lot of other people want to meet him, just to say that I met him. And, of course, when I got there, it took a little different turn, but one I wasn't expecting, but I'm glad happened.
What happened when you finally saw him?
Well, we had been riding back and forth for a couple of weeks. And when I finally got up there, I had to sit and wait, of course. You have to check in, and it's a big hassle, really, to get in there. And then, so as I was sitting and waiting for him to be called in, you know, I'm looking around at everybody, and then he walks in, and he's just this larger-than-life character, and he's walking around, and he's shaking everybody's hand, and he's talking to him like he's known him forever. And he's just charismatic. He's one of those people that you're just naturally drawn to. And I think that if you talk to anyone who's met him personally or who knows him personally, they'll tell you the same thing. To know him is to love him. That's just how it is.
Was there immediate chemistry between the two of you?
I think so, probably. I didn't want to admit it for a little while, but there definitely was an immediate attraction for some reason that I don't know and can't explain. It just happened.
And how much more time did he have left in prison when you met Trina?
Almost a year.
Almost a year. You saw him frequently during that year, I guess.
Yes, I saw him. Visiting days were Saturday and Sundays, and I saw him every Saturday and Sunday from 8 in the morning to, I think, 3 in the afternoon. And then they also had extra visiting days during holidays, and so I saw him every holiday, too.
And did you fall in love with him while he was in prison? Or did it? Go ahead.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I think some would say this is unconventional.
I think that some would be right. It's definitely unconventional. But, you know, things happen, and everyone isn't built the same. I don't know how it happened. You know, people are attracted to other people for different reasons. And you know, I see a lot of couples and I think, oh, wow, they don't match. But it works for them and it works for us. We're very happy. We have a great marriage, much better than a lot of people I know. And if it works and you're happy, then that's all that really matters.
The age difference is certainly, I hate to say a factor, but it's something that you live with. Chances are you will outlive the former governor. There's a 51-year age difference. Is that something you think about every now and then?
Every once in a while, something happens that I notice it or that it makes me think about it. But, you know, you can't live your life like that. You have to live your life for today. I could get hit by a truck tomorrow and die. So chances are that I may outlive him, but I may not. And, you know, I feel like that gives me the advantage because there are so many couples that lose a spouse unexpectedly and they've wasted all this time and there are all these things they could have and should have done together and they didn't because they thought they had a lifetime. I know that I don't have a lifetime. I recognize that our time is limited and because of that, we wake up every single morning excited to be together and excited to have another day. And we do everything we can, and we spend all the time we can together. And when it does happen, and I hate to even think about it, and I realize there's going to come a time when it will, when it does, I will never look back and say, I wish we would have taken that trip, or I wish we would have had lunch together more often, because we do everything we can possibly do together.
297-5633, if you'd like to talk with Trina Edwards. As you can hear, she's an articulate woman. She has been with the former governor when he has made appearances on this show before, but this is the first time we've had the pleasure of talking with her, and the reality show, The Governor's Wife, premieres this Sunday, a long-awaited show that was several months, if not years, in the making. It was kind of a laborious process, wasn't it?
Definitely was that. I didn't recognize how much work it would be before we started, but we worked 6 hours a day, 12 days a week on the weeks that we filmed. There were some weeks in between that I was very sick and in the hospital and I couldn't film. But generally, we worked 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, and it was very hectic, to say the least.
And you were pregnant for much of this time, right?
I was pregnant for the majority of it, yes.
How is Eli doing?
Oh, he slept through the night last night for the second time. So knock on wood, he's about to start sleeping through the night. We can get some rest around here.
Eli Wallace Edwards, born August 1st, is that correct? 2013. His birthday is 6 days short of the governor's. You're also an August birthday, right?
I am, and I have another son who's the end of July, so we have four Leos living in this house.
This relationship is one I'm sure that's fascinating, and you know, we'll find out more about it, I'm sure, through this reality show. But how much of it was staged, and how much of it is the real deal?
In the beginning, we were going to do something a little more staged, like you see some reality shows that they're obviously staged. But then we decided that, you know, we have such a unique situation, and it really is such an amazing family that we have. So not very much of it is scripted. Of course, you know, you can't just follow a family around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It would really be boring. You know, so there are, you know, you do have to set up the scenes, but it is about what was actually going on in our lives at the time. And you can see, and I believe I've only seen two episodes, but I believe it accurately portrays our relationships and the dynamics that we have in our family. So, and I think you'll find it more sincere than most of the shows out there, which makes it unique and hopefully which will make it successful.
The governor's daughters, Anna and Victoria, are are featured. And in some cases, at least Victoria doesn't come across as a real advocate of this relationship. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. You know, in the beginning, when you meet people, you know, sometimes personalities clash, and I think that that definitely happens with me and Victoria. But I think that you'll see throughout the season that we figure out a way to to get along, and we learned how to live together as a family. And I think that that will show through, at least I hope so, throughout the season. In the beginning, it definitely was a strained relationship, as I'm sure as the people who saw the clip on CNN would have been able to see. But it got better. It's just natural for people to clash. Everybody doesn't love each other the first time they meet, and that's kind of how we were. But we've learned to love each other because we both love her daddy, and we have found a way to get along. So,
well, here's the trailer. J.C. Kane has it ready that has been running for the governor's wife, featuring the lady we're speaking with, Trina Scott Edwards.
Life is a Cinderella story.
The governor's wife has it all.
You're only as young as the woman you feel.
Fame.
My husband is a rock star.
Fortune.
When in doubt, bring the cash.
Family.
I have two teenage boys and two 60-year-old stepdaughters.
But this bombshell is about to blow things up.
Hey, guess what? I'm going to have a baby.
I'm going to die a happy man.
The Governor's Wife, series premiere, Sunday at 10 on A&E.
All right. It kind of captures it all.
Yeah, that's pretty much us.
What about having the baby? How much discussion was there as to whether it would be prudent to have a child? You've got two sons who are teenagers, and the governor has two daughters who are in their 60s, and a son, Stephen, we know well. So how much discussion was there about whether it was a good thing to have another baby?
Of course, we had had a lot of discussion off camera before we ever started filming about that, because I have two kids, and I used to want to have six, so I settled for three. I desperately wanted another child. I was one of those people that is born to be a mommy. There's nothing greater in the world than being a mommy. And so we discussed all the options, and we know that there are obvious downfalls to it, and we have gotten called out on that a lot. But, you know, a baby is a blessing, and if I didn't have Eli, now that I have him, I look back and I wonder, what did I do for the last 14 years since I had my last one without having this perfect little child? He's such an angel. He's beautiful. He's sleeping through the night, which makes him even more lovable. It's a great feeling to be a new parent, and we're very excited about it, and we look at new life as a blessing and a miracle. And anyone who doesn't, will shame on them.
Do you think you'll go into politics?
Me?
No,
or Eli?
No, Eli. Well, okay. Well, let's start with Eli.
I want Eli to do whatever makes him happy. And deep down inside, I hope that he does not go into politics, because just the little bit of experience I've had with it, I don't necessarily love it.
Okay.
It's a very hard life, and, you know, it's something I hope he doesn't want for himself, but if he does, I'll support him in whatever he wants to do.
So I guess that means you would not be running at any juncture.
No, okay. No.
is it true you're a Republican?
Even though people have asked a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. Are you a Republican?
I am a Republican, yes.
So how does that work with the state's best-known Democrat?
Well,
in the same bed.
Which he talks about all the time. We're actually both very moderate and middle of the road. So we agree on almost everything, and things that we don't agree on, we agree to disagree. But for the most part, we agree on everything. We're both fiscally conservative and socially liberal. So there really has been no problems with that at all.
Did you agree on the presidential selection last year?
He couldn't vote, so it didn't matter.
No, but I know he couldn't vote, but you voted for both of them.
We would have canceled each other's votes on that, though. So.
Really?
Yes.
So I'm surmising that you probably voted for Mitt Romney.
I did, yes.
Okay. So you didn't agree on that one. Now, is there any possibility the governor might run for office again?
Well, that's something I would have to let you ask him, but... There are whispers around close to us, but you'd have to ask him that.
Okay, well, we will return with Trina Scott Edwards, and we will talk with Herb about the reality show and much more. And you heard it, there are whispers that former Governor Edwin Edwards might be running again. We'll talk about it when we return and much more in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing. 297-5633, your number. We have a bit more time with Trina Scott Edwards, the star of The Governor's Wife, premiering Sunday on A&E, a reality show that has been long awaited. You went to Broadmoor High School, correct?
I did. Go Bucks.
Yeah. Class of which year?
96.
96. So that was the year that Edwin Edwards left office.
It is.
Yeah. So you were a senior in high school when he finished his political career. That's interesting. So I guess you never had the pleasure of voting for him.
No, I didn't. And I may not have voted for him because I'm a staunch Republican.
Really? Well, if you had been Edwin Edwards and David Duke, which it was.
I would have voted Edwin Edwards, definitely.
Okay.
Along with everybody else in Louisiana.
Well, Duke did get 671,000 votes. So obviously there are some folks out there who voted for him who are still in this state. Now,
it's a tide and a chain. It really is.
Well, tonight at the Lod Cook Hotel, the governor will be there at 6 o'clock, and yours truly will be a facilitator as the governor talks, and perhaps we'll hear more about this rumor floating that the former governor might end up running for office again.
Did I just start that rumor, or was that a rumor before me?
Well, actually, I've heard it in a few places over the last few days. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad that didn't start here.
But constitutionally, I think he may have some challenges running in the state, but he could run for a federal office. I think that so he could run for the U.S. Senate next year if he wanted to.
If he wanted to, he could. Yes.
Well, we'll find out more about that tonight, I presume. And what would you do if he said, "I want to get back in the rat race"?
I would not like it, but I love him, and I would support whatever it is he decides to do. And if he made the decision to do that, I would stand behind him 100%.
What is your perception? Have you followed it closely enough, Trina, to know what his options are? Since he is a convicted felon, he can't vote, but can he run?
He can run. There's no doubt about that. He can run. But I'm not sure that he really wants to do that or that I want him to do that. I mean, there are definitely whispers. People have asked him about it. But I think it's best now if we just take the time to enjoy ourselves and our new baby and travel a little bit. And I'm ready for him to retire.
Christina in Oklahoma City listening online. Christina, you're on the air with Trina Edwards. Hi.
Yay, I found you. She posted something on Facebook, and I said, I've got to listen to this.
Well, thank you.
Well, do you have a question?
Well, I wanted to ask if she was going to make any more road trips in her new RV that her wonderful husband bought.
Unfortunately, I think I'm going to be forced to make some more road trips. It's in the shop getting repaired and washed right now, and I think we're planning on going somewhere during the Thanksgiving holidays. So I'll keep everybody on Facebook posted. I hope to have a much more smooth trip this time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Christina. Now, I see in some of the promotional material for The Governor's Wife, you're attired in a dress with stars and stripes. You look nice. Very patriotic.
Thank you. I'm a patriotic kind of girl.
A good Republican patriot.
A good Republican patriot. That's me.
Yeah. Did you vote for Bobby Jindal?
I did the second time. I didn't the first time. That was the first election I ever voted for a Democrat in. And the third time, no, I did not.
You did not. Okay, so let me follow it. You voted against him the first time. That was a Blanco race,
yes.
Right? Okay. You voted for him the second time, did not vote for him the last time around.
Exactly.
Do you think he's doing a good job?
No, no, I don't. I think that I hate to talk ugly about people because my mother taught me that if you don't have anything nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all.
Well, it's not personal. It's not personal.
Which I learned later doesn't apply to politics or public figures.
Okay. Trina Scott Edwards, who will be featured in all her glory along with her family. How have your sons adapted to this unconventional relationship and the attention they're getting? I understand they're going to be featured prominently, Logan and Trevor.
Yes, they adapted well to our marriage and our life. The show, my middle son, Trevor, loves it. He loves every minute of it. He loves filming. He loves being on TV. He loves all his friends talking about him being on TV. My oldest son, Logan, is a lot more shy, and he didn't really care for it that much. I'm not sure he would even want to do it again, and, of course, I would never force either one of them. They both had the option before if they wanted to be involved. But I think they're adapting well. They're great kids, and
do they like their stepfather? Do they like Edwin?
Yeah, they do, because he's the good cop. And I'm the bad cop. So anytime I say no, they go to him, and he says yes, because he is a pushover and a softie. So they definitely like him. They get their way.
Well, he definitely looks in the middle on some of these disputes between you and Victoria. I would imagine the governor at times is a bit uncomfortable about this.
He is, and it seldom causes problems, not in our marriage or in our relationship, but the fact that there are times when we don't get along, and he is in the middle of it. But I'm a parent, and I have children, and I recognize the importance of a relationship between a parent and a child, and I would never come between that. So anytime there's been a problem between Victoria and I try to leave Edwin out of it. He goes and sees her. He visits with her. He takes her out to dinner. He takes her out to lunch. If it's a time when we love each other, I go along. If it's a time when we don't, I stay back. But I would never do anything to try to come between he and any of his children.
Charles on North Foster. Please be brief, Charles. You're on with Trina Edwards.
Hi, Trina. I heard Jim ask you about if you voted for Bobby Jindal and if you were a staunch Republican. I was wondering if Jim would tell the listeners about how he voted and if he's a staunch Republican.
Well, I'm not a staunch Republican, and I'm not sure my votes are particularly relevant, but I thank you for the question, Charles. But Trina Edwards.
Oh, you're good at giving questions but not answering.
You're right about that. I don't like being on the other side. But it is interesting that after all these years and all these races, and there have been 26 of them, I believe, with Edwin Washington Edwards, that he... He has chosen to spend his golden years with a person who disagrees with him, at least as far as party affiliation, in politics, which has been the biggest part of his public life.
Well, we agree mostly. You know, he was a Democrat way back when. I like to say that was when Democrats were a little different than they are today. So we agree. We honestly, we disagree on abortion. Other than that, I can't think of anything that we seriously disagree on.
Well, I'm going to let you go in a minute, but on this show, he has said that he has some doubts about an afterlife. Do you agree on that?
We disagree on that as well. And I'm not sure he believes that. I think he just likes to shock people with that.
Well, he has an opinion, and it's his, and he seems to be content with it.
Yes, he doesn't argue with me on that at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anytime the subject has come up. So.
Well, Trina, we thank you. Good luck Sunday, and hopefully we'll talk with you again very soon. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Trina Scott Edwards. And now we're joined by Mark LaFleur, promising writer. His book is Elysian Fields, a novel with New Orleans as the backdrop. And good morning to you, Mark, joining us from New York City.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you.
Your book is one that features a character named Simpson Weems. He's a 36-year-old aspiring poet. His life is on hold, and he is attempting to get out of New Orleans and move to San Francisco. What about the tortured life of Simpson Weems. Where did this come from in your vast imagination?
Well, thank you. You're being very generous about my imagination. There was a bit of personal experience in it, of course, but actually after grad school at LSU, I did move out to San Francisco. So I actually was, I had my own frustrations, but I actually did move there. I lived there for 5 years and loved it. But I could, for a long time, I was living in Baton Rouge and wanting to be out there already. Simpson works at a copy shop in the CBD, the Central Business District on Barone Street, and he yearns to move out there. He wishes he had lived in the, during the Beat Generation. He is feels obligated, though. He's committed to help his mother, his ailing, aging mother who lives in Gentilly, and his brother, Bartholomew, who is a few years younger but still lives at home with Mama, and he is emotionally volatile, to put it lightly, and very has voracious appetites. He's kind of a gargantuan character. And Simpson, he just drives Simpson crazy. So something's got to give.
Well, Mark, your book was written in New Orleans shortly before Katrina.
That's right.
Okay. And Elysian Fields comes from the name of the famous avenue.
That's right.
And this area where much of the action takes place is in the historic neighborhood of Gentilly. Is that?
Beautiful Gentilly. That's right. Right along Elysian Fields Avenue. Yeah. It's a great avenue.
It's in a
fictional neighborhood called Dangers Park. And it's approximately near Dillard, approximately between Interstate 610 and Gentilly Boulevard. And it is a part of town where the municipal workers seem to never come to cut the grass, and wrong number phone calls seem to gravitate there, and everything is kind of overgrown, but there's a cemetery directly across the street from their house. So it's a very New Orleans neighborhood.
Well, the mystery of New Orleans is on grand display in Elysian Fields, and there's not only Simpson Weems, but there is his brother, Bartholomew. Tell us about Bartholomew.
Bartholomew is a rather gargantuan character. He kind of sucks the air out of any room he's in. He kind of dominates the any situation. He is always hungry. He is a devout Christian, a sincere Christian, but he is so devout, he's kind of formed his own kind of Christianity. For example, he believes that churches are idolatrous, and but he has a close friend, the Reverend Bud Rex, who's a blind preacher a few blocks away, and he goes to visit with him and reads the Bible to the blind preacher. And Bartholomew is, his mother wishes he would go get himself checked out by a doctor so he could get on psychiatric disability, but he refuses. He insists that he's healthy as a buffalo. And Simpson, too, is trying to get him to go, but the more Simpson pushes, the more Bartholomew resists. And there are some scenes where he goes reluctantly to look for a job, and a few comical accidents ensue.
Well, your book features these two distinct characters and your implication that life consists mostly of dealing with your ghosts.
That is what a reviewer wrote. That may be true. That wasn't exactly in my mind consciously, but though that may well be true. One of the major themes, I mean, speaking of ghosts, related to that, I could say, is the theme of forgiveness. And Simpson's struggle to forgive his mother for the expectations she has of him to stay. She complains when he wants to move farther than three blocks away from her house, and his struggle to forgive mainly his brother. And he finds that before he can even begin to forgive, much less love, he has to begin to accept his brother. So there's a series of seeing Simpson thinking this and thinking that and trying to get over his resentments and to focus on what he can do to get himself into that better place out on the West Coast.
you acknowledge, Mark, that there is a bit of you in Simpson?
Yes, there is indeed.
Are you 6 foot six?
I'm not quite that tall, no. In fact, I'd probably stop at about 6 foot. But that's one of the exaggerations in the book, whether he could really be 6 foot six. Maybe he's only 6 foot four, but he's very tall and thin. And the part, though, of what I would say that I share with him is just it is a there's a struggle between one's ambition and one's obligations, one's obligation to work, to earn a living, one's obligations to one's family, one's obligations to one's community. And yet to be an artist, you also need the private time all by yourself, sitting there at the desk where nobody can do it for you. So that, I would say, we share.
We've gotten some very nice reviews for this book. I'm reading one from Christine Wiltz.
Oh, yes.
Compelling and mesmerizing debut novel, Mark LaFleur has taken on New Orleans in a big way. Elysian Fields is real literature coming out of a real place. A great addition to the already substantial body of New Orleans writing. It's a story of such originality that the familiar top layer of the city is peeled away. The local color here is handled just right. The depiction of the city's neighborhoods and peculiarities is right on, but it's in the deeply individualized characters who anchor the story so solidly. So that describes your book in vivid detail, and I commend you for doing it. You are in the literary world.
Yes, I want to. I'm very delighted that Chris Wiltz, someone as talented as she is, by the way, she'll be winning the Louisiana Writer Award at the next weekend's Louisiana Book Festival. So it's, I'm delighted that someone as talented as Chris Wiltz had such nice things to say.
You will be at the book festival.
I will be, yes, Saturday. It's going to be all day Saturday, November 2nd, downtown Baton Rouge, near the old state capitol. I'm sorry, not the old state, the state capitol, near the state library. And I'll be reading at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And people can find out more about it at louisianabookfestival.org. But it's going to be a great thing. About 200 writers, the great Ernest Gaines of Pointe-Coupee Parish will be there, internationally known Ernest Gaines. Also, Chris Wiltz, as I mentioned, John Biganay, Tim Gautreau, a lot of Louisiana writers.
Well, it's going to be a spectacular event, and it's one that is important. It went away for a few years and has come back under Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden, and I know you're pleased to be coming from New York, where...
Oh, I'm delighted, yes.
Yeah, where you you work with authors quite frequently.
Yes, I've worked in book publishing for, that's pretty much been my career out in San Francisco, a little for LSU Press as a freelancer before I moved out west and then over to New York City, and then worked as a freelancer in New New Orleans, but would go back and forth to New York frequently. And in fact, that's how I met my wife. But yes, I've had opportunity to work with quite a few authors.
Well, thank you, Mark LaFleur, and congratulations on Elysian Fields, a novel from this fine man. Back in 90 seconds on 89.3. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. And in studio, we have Stephen Patallo. He's an interesting gentleman who came this way as part of the Manship School of Mass Communication Centennial. He's a graduate in 1990. And after graduating, he went on a interesting voyage through the journalistic world that includes the music world. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, you got into the video world, and you've rubbed shoulders with some famous people. Who are some of the more prominent people you have encountered along the way?
Well, as a freelance journalist, I had the opportunity to interview many great musicians. I think Joey Ramone, Joan Jett, Ray Davies of the Kinks are some of the highlights. Members of Cheap Trick, Henry Rollins, Rick Springfield, folks like that. It's always been something that I've found very fulfilling, is to talk to musicians about their creative process and artists in general.
Are musicians usually good interviewees?
That's a good question. I think oftentimes they will have patented answers if they have something that they're pushing at the time. But if you can get into talking about what the creative process is for them, it can be very interesting. And finding out what their influences, what their references are, I think all of that adds up to a really interesting interview.
Stephen Patalo, he grew up in Biloxi.
That's right.
How did you end up at LSU?
Well, I applied, and they let me in, basically. But yeah.
You could have gone to some Mississippi schools,
You are correct, sir. I could have gone to Ole Miss. I got accepted there, but I figured if I wanted to do anything outside of Mississippi, maybe I should look for a college outside of Mississippi. So I ended up at LSU on a Chancellor's Aid scholarship, and that's how I got into student media, actually.
And at LSU, you were very active as a student journalist.
I did a whole lot. I saw a piece in Rolling Stone magazine on Living Color, the band, and I was like, that looks like something I would love to do. So I just went out, found a band. Actually, they were called the Tailgaters. They were playing at the Chimes. I contacted the publicist, interviewed them, got a piece in. Next thing you know, doing it all the time.
You wrote your first short story at what age?
Four
years old.
Yeah, it was a short little story about a mouse whose home catches on fire, in the end, a worm comes and puts out the fire. The end. You know, I had a flair for the tragic even back then, I guess.
And at around 10, you got a tape recorder from Radio Shack and went to town. What happened?
Well, my brother and I were enjoying Dynamite magazine and the parodies that they had in there, and so we thought it'd be fun to do those on tape. So we did that, and then we found some radio shows at the local bookstore. They had them on audio cassette, and all you needed to do to have a show was do all the audio and the special effects and stuff like that. So we did that a lot. My brother and I used to draw our own cartoons and make, you know, little radio shows of those, and we had a pretty creative childhood.
You were at LSU from when to when?
I was there 86 to 90, and I got my bachelor's in journalism, and then I had graduate school classes after that up until 95 when I moved to New York.
Yeah, I think you and I had a class with the great Dale Thorne.
That's right, Dale Thorne, one of my favorite. Actually, my voice today sounds a little like Dale Thorne. I think he was one of my favorites as well. I remember turning in a paper to him once, and his way of describing that it only needed to be four pages was, Steve, if this paper is three pages, it's not quite enough, and at five, I'd find it too taxing.
So he meant four pages.
Exactly. But that was Dale Thorne's way of saying that. What a great guy. I'd really enjoyed his classes. And speaking of Dale Thorne, when you were talking about Edwin Edwards earlier, I'm reminded of what Dale Thorne used to say, that Louisiana loves its rascals.
Well, Dale Thorne was Edwin Edwards' public relations guy.
Yes. So he had it firsthand.
When he was congressman, and then when he was first elected governor of Louisiana, so he knows Edwin Wynn.
Yeah, and by the way, I would like to say that I'm not looking forward to this reality show at all. The Edwin Edwards that I love is the Edwards from 40 years ago, maybe even more than that. And I think, actually, reality television in general is abhorrent and has ruined music television, ruined MTV, it ruined VH1. It ruined Bravo TV, which was an arts network at one time, we can all remember. But, you know, I guess if the governor wants to be on television and, you know, a trophy wife show is something that appeals to him, then, well, good luck.
Is that what Trina is?
Well, you tell me. When you marry somebody 50 years younger than
he's,
you...
Maybe he's a trophy husband.
That's a good point. But there's nothing interesting about this at all. There really isn't.
Well, I'm sure many people will be watching.
Well, a lot of people smoke crack, too. That doesn't mean it's good for you.
Okay, you've got an opinion. I like that. But Trina Scott Edwards certainly is reveling in this. And it's not like this is going to destroy the legacy of Edwin Washington Edwards. A man went to prison for 8.5 years, for heaven's sake. What's wrong with a little reality show?
It's just... It doesn't raise the level of television in any way, shape, or form.
I don't think that was its intent.
But shouldn't that be the intent of television? I mean, the airwaves should still be somewhat precious, shouldn't they? Mm-hmm.
How many office holders raise the level of political discourse?
That's what they should all aspire to, though.
That's what they should aspire to, but quite often it doesn't work out the way we intend things to.
Well, what do you think the intention of this TV show is? A launching pad for the next gubernatorial race?
Perhaps, perhaps. But I think the show is more about Trina than it is her husband. It is the governor's wife, after all.
Yeah. That's not interesting either.
No? Well, it's not interesting to you, Stephen, but well, I'm sure it'll be interesting to some people.
Sure. I mean, reality television is a huge business. And when you put the business before the show, then you get what you pay for.
So. Mm-hmm. And I doubt that this is going to be an 8 or 10 year process. I would imagine it'll be 8 or 10 weeks, and they'll be on their way.
That's your prediction, yeah. Jim? You go on record as saying
I don't think it's
going to
last.
It'll be canceled by 2014? That's what you're predicting?
I don't know if it'll be canceled, or maybe Edwin will be moving on to other things like running for office or something along those lines.
Okay.
But you have stated, I stated, rub shoulders with some interesting people, and when you were in school, you were into movies, unlike reality shows, and you wanted to interview Dustin Hoffman, right?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, I was as part of the LSU in London program with the great Dr. Gary from the... Ron Gary from the journalism school, who I saw last night, still doing great.
He is.
And Dustin Hoffman was appearing in The Merchant of Venice as Shylock, and I tried to get an interview with him. Did what I thought you did, which is go drop a note off at the stage door and see if anybody calls you back. And they did call me back to say no. No, if we're not going to talk to, any of the London papers, I don't think we're going to talk to an LSU student either. So thanks anyway, which, you take a shot.
Dustin Hoffman, by the way, played Carl Bernstein in All the President's Men. Carl Bernstein was sitting right in that same chair that you are today, yesterday, on this program.
Oh.
And he said, off the air, he said he liked Dustin Hoffman's portrayal of him.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I was there at the talk yesterday at the LSU Union. He really laid into the current media in what he thinks that should be their role and what he thinks government's role should be. And it was quite an eye-opener.
Yeah, he's big into the best obtainable version of the truth, and quite often we're not seeking truth, we're seeking to spin, and that's not what journalism was intended to be.
What do you think the truth of the governor's wife is?
The truth of the governor's wife, I think it's an interesting show, and it appears that they're madly in love. She's 35, he's 86. If he had gone 51 years in the opposite direction, his wife would have been born in 1876. It's an unconventional thing that people are fascinated with. Why and how? And Edwin Edwards, it's 75, Stephen. It's 75. Edwin Edwards gets a 10-year prison sentence. He serves 8.5 years. Most men of his age would say, okay, this is it. I'm going to die in prison. As he said, they sent me away for life, and I came out with a wife.
Then write a book, Edwin. I'd rather read the book.
He's already done that.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
But you're panning a show, and that's what bothers me about his appearance with Larry King, is that some of the editorial writers who panned that appearance at the LSU Union a few weeks ago, they were not there. They did not see it. We haven't seen the show. Let's give it a fair shot. There might be something enlightening in there.
Yeah, I think I saw all I needed to see with the preview.
Okay.
But,
So you don't watch movies, you just watch the trailers and say, hey, I like it or I don't? Is that what you do?
No.
As a critic? That's not very fair, is it?
Well, no, it's not. You're correct. But a film is usually a narrative of some sort with actors and people of talent. A reality show does not actually have to have anything in it.
Okay.
There's no standard to aspire to at all. So, I have worked with Edwin Edwards. He was on my television show when I was a student at LSU. He did the top 10 grossing films of the week on a movie review program I did called Flick Picks with Dan Davis. And he was wonderful to work with and great off the cuff. And it was just a coincidence that week Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was one of the films that was in the top 10. And he said maybe that's the movie they should make about my life.
Well, you have been a prolific writer, and you have something called Shoot the Singer, right, coming out next year.
That's correct.
What is Shoot the Singer pertaining to?
Shoot the Singer is a book of interviews with different musical artists about their music videos. The world of music video has been something that I've really delved into the past 3 or 4 years. And Shoot the Singer is much more about what it was like shooting those iconic videos. All kinds of artists were just very open about what happened on the set, what the inspirations were for some of these things. I recall talking to Terry Nunn from Berlin, who talked about her band and the Metro and No More Words were some of the great videos they did. One was inspired by Bonnie and Clyde, which she revealed as to being a very important moment in her life when she was young, seeing Bonnie and Clyde. A lot of these stories are great. I actually run a blog. I write a blog called The Golden Age of Music Video, and many of these stories have been there, and some of them will be published for the first time.
So music videos have more appeal and more impact on our culture than reality shows?
Not anymore, I don't think. I think music video is actually experiencing a resurgence, though. Very recently, there's been a kind of a confluence of different things in the music video world that make it a very interesting place right now. Sean Combs just launched Revolt TV, which is a sort of almost an MTV kind of reboot, a station that's all about music. And if you've seen the latest Volkswagen ad, it's basically Take On Me by A-ha's, their music video redone as a commercial. There's another, you know, 8 or 9 little things that are happening out there. There's a new company called Zeus, Z-U-U-S, and they are in their beta testing right now, but they're looking to be the Pandora of music video, which I think is fascinating.
Also, you have something called Welcome to the House of Fun coming. What is this?
Well, that is a book that I've been working on for several years now. I've interviewed over 60 music video directors about what it was like to shoot music videos between 1976 and 1993, which is the golden age of music video. And many of these particular directors had just fascinating, amazing stories. And I was lucky enough to be able to just get the ball rolling, and next thing I knew, I had, you know, over 60 interviews with these guys. Some of the things were stories that had not been told before. Actually, Steve Barron told me a story about shooting a Madonna video called Burning Up. And there's a shot in it where a crane is over Madonna. She's in a boat. And he said that the crane started to tip forward, and the weight of it was about to come crashing down on Madonna and would have killed her instantly. But everybody took a lean back, and it returned to its original place, and he saved Madonna's life. Now, it's, of course, conjecture as to whether that's helpful for the culture or not, but I'm glad she's still alive.
Sometimes entertainment is an escape from some of the more mundane things or graphic aspects of our culture.
Well, one of the other things that I really enjoyed about talking to these guys was some of the funnier stories. Actually, Russell Mulcahy told me he was shooting a music video for Ultravox, and a guy's hair caught on fire, which, you know, in those days was not a great thing either. But they didn't have any of the safety or safety restrictions, et cetera, that they have on set now. So there was all kinds of mayhem. In Billy Idol's White Wedding video, there's a motorcycle that comes down a flight of stairs, and the director, David Mallet, told me that was typical. They would just do things like that. There's no ambulance standing by in case the guy got killed, and he would have been killed if he'd have leaned one to the left or to the right. So,
well, we commend you for your work, and Shoot the Singer and Welcome to the House of Fun, two different books.
That's correct. Shoot the Singer is going to be out next year, and we still don't have a date of publication for Welcome to the House of Fun. But you can check out goldenageofmusicvideo.com for current stories. We catch up with the artists of that era and see what they're doing now as well. And you can also check me out on Twitter, at Stephen Patello.
Thank you, Stephen Patello. Good to visit with you.
Thank you, Jim.
And a note that Edwin Edwards is at the Lod Cook Hotel tonight, 6 o'clock, and a night maze will be held tomorrow, including bonfire, hot dogs, live music, 4 to 9, at the LSU Rural Life Museum. The Botanic Gardens and Burden Horticulture Society is presenting its annual corn maze, and this is part of that. And we will be back Monday. Until then, for J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.